Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Bristol Myers Squibb, we spoke with Neelanjan Ghosh, MD, PhD, to discuss the FDA approval of lisocabtagene maraleucel. Ghosh is the director of the lymphoma program at the Levine Cancer Institute of Atrium Health. On June 24, 2022, the FDA approved lisocel as second-line therapy for adult patients with large B-cell lymphoma, including diffuse large B-cell lymphoma not otherwise specified, high-grade B-cell lymphoma, primary mediastinal large B-cell lymphoma, and follicular lymphoma grade 3B. The approval provides patients with earlier access to life-prolonging therapy, particularly those who are older and have comorbidities, Ghosh explained. In our exclusive interview, Ghosh discussed the FDA approval of lisocel in large B-cell lymphoma, pivotal efficacy and safety data from the Phase 3 TRANSFORM trial and the Phase 2 TRANSCEND pilot 017006 study, and the effect of the approval on academic and community center practice patterns.
It is very exciting to hear that the FDA approved lisocel for second-line relapsed refractory large B-cell lymphoma. What would you say is the significance of this FDA approval?
Yes, this approval is highly significant. We know that majority of patients with primary refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and early relapsed diffuse large cell lymphoma do not derive a benefit from salvage chemotherapy followed by autologous transplant. But despite this, it has been the standard of care because this option was better than other options out there. The data from the TRANSFORM study showed superiority of lisocel over high-dose salvage therapy and autologous transplant. So this approval will allow earlier access to CAR T-cell therapy for this group of patients.
Elaborating a little bit more on that, how do you really see the approval affecting current practice patterns, both for academic centers and then as well as for your community partners?
Yeah, that's a great question. So most patients with large B-cell lymphoma actually get frontline therapy in the community setting. So in addition to making our community aware of this indication, we need to educate our community about the time it takes to receive CAR T-cell therapy, right? So the process includes many steps, includes financial clearance, a date for collection of T-cells called leukapheresis, and this date has to be acceptable to both the institution and the company manufacturing CAR T-cells. And the time spent then to manufacture the CAR T-cells, it's often known as the vein-to-vein time. So, this entire process can take 6 weeks or more. We often focus on just the vein-to-vein time, but there is many things to be done even before the leukapheresis has occurred. And so, because of this, and also knowing that the patients are refractory or have early relapse disease, that disease has to be controlled while the patient is waiting to receive the CAR T-cell therapy. Therefore, I think early referral to a CAR T-cell center is crucial to get the process going while discussing with the referring physician ways and means to control the disease in the interim. So those might include things like bridging therapy, which was allowed on the TRANSFORM study. So in some patients, it may end up being third line despite the indication of second line, because you may have to give something to control the disease while they're waiting to get the T-cells. But that's a discussion which would best be done with the treating center and the referring physician, because there are some treatments which can be toxic to lymphocytes, and we may want to avoid those kind of treatments prior to collecting the lymphocytes. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we control the disease so that the patient is able to get the treatment which they would perhaps develop benefit from in the future.
And, now that CAR T-cell therapy has been around for a couple of years now, we're seeing more real-world data sets kind of showing that patients outside of the strict clinical trial criteria do benefit from CAR T. For you, which factors would clinicians need to weigh in terms of patient fitness, comorbidities, et cetera, specifically on when to use lisocel?
Yeah, so, the There are many factors to be taken into account before giving lysosel. And so we look at the ECOG performance status. We often look at cardiac function, renal function, and things like that. So looking at the comorbidities, fortunately, there's a study called the pilot study, which looked at patients who had comorbidities and who were not considered as good candidates for autologous stem cell transplant. And to enroll in the study, the investigator needed to say that the patient is not a good candidate for transplant, and they needed to meet one of these criteria where one of them was age above 70. They could have had impaired renal function, impaired cardiac function, a decrease in DLCO, which is reflective of pulmonary function. They also looked at hepatic function, and the patient needed to have one of those criteria, and they were enrolled in the study, and the outcomes from the study was pretty good. So the bottom line is that patients who are going to receive lysosel, they need not be just candidates who you would otherwise consider for transplant. So the eligibility for lysosel is much broader than a standard transplant eligibility in terms of age, comorbidities, and disease status. So I think that is the most important thing. So if there is a patient who is older, who is not, who has some comorbidities and has relapsed or refractory large cell lymphoma, they can still benefit from getting lysosel and have high efficacy and low toxicity, which is the lysosel, which is what lysosel offers in this patient population.
So you mentioned this a little bit earlier, how we saw improved outcomes with lysosel versus salvage chemo and high-dose therapy and transplant and transform. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the data that we saw from that study and its significance?
Transform was a randomized study of patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, not otherwise specified, which includes de novo diffuse large cell lymphoma and those who have transformed from indolent non-Hodgkin lymphoma, high-grade B-cell lymphoma, which includes double hit and triple hit, follicular lymphoma 3B, primary mediastinal B-cell lymphoma, and T-cell histocyte-rich diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So these patients needed to have either refractory disease from frontline therapy, or they should have relapse within 12 months after frontline therapy. And the frontline therapy should have included an anthracycline and CD20 agent, which is very standard, obviously. So these patients, in addition, should have been otherwise considered to be eligible for autologous transplant and have a good performance status of ECOG performance status of 1 to 1. So eligible patients underwent leukapheresis and then were randomized to get lysosel or standard of care. And the standard of care included salvage therapy followed by autologous transplant for those who responded to salvage therapy. Importantly, the study included crossover from the standard of care arm to the lysosel arm, and this was allowed for those who failed to respond to standard of care by 9 weeks post-randomization, or progressed at any time, or started a new antineoplastic therapy after the transplant. So the primary endpoint was event-free survival, and events were defined as either death due to any cause, progressive disease, failure to achieve a complete response or a partial response by 9 weeks post-randomization, or start of an antineoplastic therapy, whichever occurred first. The median event-free survival for lysosel was 10.1 months, and compare that to standard of care, which was only 2.3 months. So this is highly significant and showed a 65% risk reduction in terms of events with lysosel compared to standard of care. And at 12 months, the event-free survival was 45% for lysosel and only 24% with standard of care. So that was the a significant margin of benefit. In terms of responses, obviously, in this patient population, we are most interested in complete responses. So the complete responses, 2/3 of the patients who got lysosel had a complete response, and 39% of those who were in standard of care had a complete response. Progression-free survival was also a secondary endpoint, and it was the median was 15 months with lysosel and 6 months with standard of care. So overall, efficacy-wise, it hit all the marks. Overall survival survival, you know, data is maturing. We'll need some longer follow-up, but we can also start seeing trends in the right direction. We have to remember that the study included the crossover, so a good number of patients in the, I believe, I think 46 patients, perhaps, in the of the 92 patients who were on the standard of care arm landed up getting CAR T-cell therapy with liso-cel. I think one person had got a non-conforming product. So but so that will affect the overall survival. But even then, I think we're starting to see some separation of the curves in the overall survival side. So that's the TRANSFORM study. The pilot study is a little different, right? It's a single arm study. And this is for not indebted for patients who were going to go to, who would be otherwise considered as a transplant candidate. And there is a difference that they did not need to relapse within 1 year. They could have relapse disease or refractory disease. So there were a number of patients who had late relapses as well, which was not the case in TRANSFORM. But then otherwise, they also all had one prior line of therapy. So this is also a second line study, but a different population of patients. Here, you know, compared to the TRANSFORM study, the median age in the pilot study was 74. Actually, the oldest patient was 84 years old. So an elderly population, about a third of the patients in the TRANSFORM study also had double hit and triple hit disease, which is really something I want to highlight, because this is the toughest group of patients you're going to have is double hit and triple hit. And, you know, those were included, obviously, in the study. And over half the patients had primary refractory disease, with 44% of the patients actually had a HCTCI score of 3 or more. And we don't know the relevance that much in CAR T-cell therapy, but patients who have undergo transplant and have HCTCI score of 3 or higher, at least with allogeneic transplant and somewhat with autologous transplant as well, their outcomes are typically poor. So they included all these patients with comorbidities, older patients with relapsed and refractory disease, a lot of refractory disease, as well as high-risk patients like double hit and triple hit. And with that, the overall response rate was really great at 80%, with 54% getting a CR. Responses were seen in all pre-specified subgroups, including patients with high-risk features, with no notifiable differences in efficacy or safety outcomes based on the HCTCI score. So they did separate out patients who had less than 3 versus 3 or higher score, and they didn't see any differences. And the median duration of response was about a year. And the median duration of response was not reached for those who achieved a CR. I think it was reached, perhaps. I think it was around 21 or 22 months for those who achieved a complete response. The median progression-free survival, I believe, was about 9 months, and the median overall survival was not reached. And one thing which was also important to note was that about a third of the patients received their were monitored as an outpatient in the pilot study, and less than half of those needed to be hospitalized for a concern for CRS or neurotoxicity after receiving the liso-cel. So this is very important. And most of the patients who received liso-cel as outpatient did not need hospitalization within 3 days of receiving. So that's an important thing to note. And these results, therefore, I think support liso-cel as second line treatment in patients with large B-cell lymphoma in whom transplant is not intended.
So elaborating a little bit more on safety of liso-cel, what adverse effects should clinicians and patients be aware of, and what interventional strategies can be used to manage these toxicities?
So in general, there are, you know, the acute side effects which are there with any CAR T cell therapy, but much lower with liso-cel is cytokine release syndrome and neurologic events, and these occur, you know, in the immediate post CAR T within days. So, but the incidence of cytokine release syndrome and neurologic events were low in both these studies, as we have seen previously with the first study published with liso-cel, the TRANSCEND study. So these were low, and even within the patients who got cytokine release syndrome or neurological events, most of them were grade one or grade two. I think there were like only a few patients, one patient each perhaps in both the studies who had grade three or grade three CRS, and I believe there was no grade four CRS. In terms of neurotoxicity also, the incidence was quite low. And again, not a pretty low incidence of grade three neurotoxicity in the single digits, I think 4 or 5% total. So most of the neurotoxicity which was seen was grade one, two. Importantly, the utilization of tocilizumab and steroids was also low, again, going along the lines of low incidence. But then there are other side effects which we need to monitor, right? So for example, by the time the patient is, out of that CRS and neurotoxicity window, and then at some point thinking of going back to their referring physician, they may still have a few things to look out for. And one of them is called prolonged cytopenia. So in this study, it was defined as those who had still grade three cytopenias at day 35 or beyond, day 35. And there were patients who had that. And also you have to monitor for hypogammaglobulinemia. Why is it important? Because if someone is, hypogammaglobulinemic or, lymphopenic and also have neutropenia, they get more prone to infections. So, preventing infections, supportive care, and giving them medications to treat early diagnosis and treatment of these would be important. And so, just to monitor those is, I think, crucial.
Is there anything else that you'd like to mention, either about lysocell itself or the field of large B-cell lymphoma in general?
Yeah, I think the field of large B-cell lymphoma has really exploded with new treatments over the last few years, including what we saw recently in the frontline setting as well. And so CAR T-cell therapy, I think in general, is a huge advancement. Within that space, lysocell is really a fantastic option because it has a really great efficacy profile and also is a really safe product amongst the CAR T products which are out there with a relatively low incidence of CRS and neurotoxicity. And also majority of those are typically low grade. Having said that, I think it's very important to be aware of the side effects, monitor those. The real question then comes is, how accessible our CAR T-cell therapy is going to be. I think we need to work as a community to make them more accessible to patient, cut down the time from when we think about CAR T-cell therapy to actually delivering the CAR T-cell therapy, make that process more efficient so that more patients can benefit from it. We also need to be aware of lots of other treatments which have come out in the space, whether it is bispecific antibodies which are in development, antibody drug conjugates, antibodies in combination with other drugs. And I think over the next few years, we need to focus as a group to figure out how to sequence these therapies so that we can maximize the benefits from these treatments and really help our patients who are in still unmet need. We do have to know that even though CAR T-cell therapy has excellent outcomes, there are many patients who are still refractory to CAR T-cell therapy and relapse after CAR T-cell therapy. So what would be the best way to sequence these other treatments out there and help these patients in unmet need? That's an area of active investigation. And I hope, we are in a much better place in the years to come. But we have made huge strides, I would say, in the last several years. So it's been great to be a part of that research.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.